On this edition of the Writers Showcase podcast, Ms. Barbara Morrison joins us to discuss her memoir, Innocence, Confessions of a Welfare Mother. Welcome to the Writers Showcase podcast. My name is Phil Nasons, and I'm happy to be the host of this weekly radio program now being featured each and every day on Max Sports channels. And today's guest is a remarkable lady. She has written a book, and if you had the opportunity to listen to Tuesday's Phil Nasons show, you already know who she is, but I'm going to introduce her anyway. She finished college, like most young ladies do, fell in love, got married, and began raising a family. What happened next is a story that she describes in her amazing memoir, Innocence, Confessions of a Welfare Mother. Please welcome Ms. Barbara Morrison to the Writers Showcase podcast. Hey, how you doing?
I'm well, thanks. Thank you for having me, Phil.
Oh, it's great. It was great having you on my show, and you were so kind to come back on this one because this is a different one. I think I'm too hard on my show. I don't know. But for those, we didn't really get into all the specifics about who you are because obviously your book, if they read it, and we hope that people do buy this book, find out really who you are. But who are you for those who haven't read your book yet?
Well, I'm first and foremost a parent. I have two children. I'm a former welfare mother. I'm a writer, obviously, since I've written a book. I'm also a dancer, and these days I'm a successful engineer.
There you go. We can stop right there. And just, we could just have them buy the book. I think that would be better. But no, it won't. I'm only teasing. Anyway, this is a writer's podcast, as you know. So we have so many people out there who listen who are, well, hope to be writers one day, or are writers now, or whatever. What were your earliest literary influences?
Well, I started out with the King Arthur tales, Malory, and those kinds of things, fairy tales, the Lang blue fairy book and green fairy book and whatever. But as I got older, my influences were Faulkner, Virginia Woolf, Adrian Rich. So varied.
Yeah, I guess so. Now, what authors influence you now?
Well, you know, I learn something from every book I read. And I have a blog, too, called Monday Morning Books, where I write about a book I've read that week and what I, as a writer, have learned about it. But some of my favorite writers are Timothy Findley, Ann Tyler, Colm Toybean, Alistair MacLeod, Natsumi Soseki, who's a Japanese writer, Kate Atkinson. I like a lot of mysteries, too. So I read lots of things.
All right. Then you probably enjoy some of the books we've had here. We've had some mystery stuff. And next week's show, you're going to really enjoy. That'll be right up your alley, I promise you. Another
great,
very strong lady, I promise you. I'll send you a link to that one. You'll definitely want to check that out.
I'm looking forward to it.
Anyway, well, thanks. This one was spellbinding. I almost cried when reading that book. Anyway, we're not talking about her book. We're talking about yours. Now, what three books? See, this is how easy it is to talk to you. I don't have any nerves, and I usually get nervous when I interview people. It's because you're a mom, you see.
That must be it.
Plus, you remind me of my sister, so that's a good thing. Anyway, if you were on a deserted island and you could only take three books with you, which ones would you take?
You know, that's an easy question because there are three books that I reread often and I really couldn't live without. The first one is Jane Eyre, which I find something new in every time I read it. The second one is Birds of Paradise by Paul Scott. He wrote the Raj Quartet, Jewel in the Crown, but it's this book, Birds of Paradise, that just affects me so deeply. And the third one would be a book by the French writer Colette called Break of Day. which just, I can't even explain. It speaks to me in a way that is really important to me.
Well, you really do have a diverse style of interest, don't you?
I do. I also read the backs of cereal boxes.
Well, that's how I learned to read, and I haven't gotten too much further, I guess. But but that's okay. I can tell you how many calories are in a bowl of Honey Nut Cheerios.
There you go.
That's all that really matters. All right. Now, if you were to describe your writing style in three words, what would those words be?
Boy, that's a hard question. I hope that my writing style would be accessible, that is, you know, easy for people to read, and thought-provoking. I hope it would be dramatic, compelling. That's more than three, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's no problem, because this is the game I get to play with you guys, because this is when I can absolutely guarantee you that I read your book. I would say encouraging, and then I would say humble, and most importantly, I would say honest.
That's good. I tried to be honest, yes.
You were brutally honest, and you were very self-introspective in your book. You know, that was good. And then you looked at the other people that were your friends without judgment in your eyes. There was no judgment, even the people who may or may not have gone as far as you. Because you were, it seemed like when I read your book, you were all in it together.
We were. There was a real sense of camaraderie. And yes, I think everybody did the best they could.
Yeah, they did. Anyway, why did you finally decide to write your memoir?
Well, I was working on a novel because I think of myself as a fiction writer primarily. And I was working with this writer and writing teacher, Marita Golden, who is a wonderful writer and a wonderful teacher. And she asked me why I was writing this novel, and I explained that I wanted to kind of open up the stereotype of a welfare mother and show people what life was really like. And she said, she suggested that I write a memoir. In fact, she ordered me to write a memoir. She said that telling my true story would be more powerful. So I did. And I really owe it to my writing group, because I kept backing off from saying too much about myself, and they kept pushing me to be, as you said, more honest and more open about myself.
Well, God bless them for that, because this is a great book. I mean, I'm not a mother, but I remember growing up in those times and knowing people and being in the same situation, sort of. So I get it. Now, last question before we take a break and you read from your book. Do you have any advice? Because you're a teacher. You were a creative writing teacher, and that's the job that really got you out of your predicament. But do you have any advice for young writers or those who are new to the writing game?
Well, my first piece of advice would be to read. Read as much and as many different kinds of things as you can. Of course, you have to take courses and workshops and learn your craft. Don't worry about publishing until you've really polished and honed your work. And it's the very best thing you can produce. And I guess similar to what we were just talking about, write with your whole heart. Don't hold anything back. As they say on, I don't know if you have the show So You Think You Can Dance where you are, but what they say to the dancers there is, don't leave anything on the stage. Put it all out there. And that's what you have to do as a writer.
I'm a tennis pro, as you know. That's what we say to our students. All right, I tell you what, that was great advice. Great advice. The thing I want to ask you, though, is how much did your blog help you with getting the word out about your book? Because you've developed quite a following, haven't you?
I have. I did many things to try and promote the book. But even before that, many things to establish my credentials as a writer so I could get a publisher for the book. So I entered sections, excerpts from the book in contests, and I also submitted them for publication as standalone essays. So those credentials really helped me, and those in the blog helped me to find a publisher.
And last question, who would that publisher be?
Apprentice House. It's a student-run publishing company. It's quite an interesting business model. It's associated with Loyola University in Baltimore. And the students do the work of the publishing house as their coursework. So they are learning to work in the industry at the same time that they're actually producing real books and working with real authors. It's very exciting.
Yeah, it sounds like it. All right, I'll tell you what, we're going to take a small break. And when the music ends, Barbara will read from her book, Innocent Confessions of a Welfare Mother. And we'll be right back.
I entered welfare with advantages of education and health and experience that enabled me to see another future. But even then, I felt the drag of the familiar and the difficulty of reinventing your life when I tried to escape poverty. Every day, I need to be reminded of what I learned then. Pay attention to people. Driving down Monroe Street in Baltimore, even I, who knew better, felt how easy it would be to see the people on these stoops through the lens of a stereotype, instead of recognizing that each person had his own or her own story, his or her own reason for sitting there. It's too easy to accept the voices around us as our opinions, too easy to rely on stereotypes instead of opening ourselves to the new and unexpected. It's too easy to be insulated, too easy to forget, to look at what we have and think it was somehow earned instead of given. Anyone can be poor anytime. We are only an accident, a divorce away from poverty. And once you've slipped into poverty, all the hard work in the world may not be enough to get you out. So much is outside your control. You have what you're born with, the luck that falls into your hands, and the help that comes out of nowhere. And when the fight is over, you forget how hard it was, like childbirth. It's easy to get soft. It's easy to drive down Monroe Street, blind to the lives of people sitting on the stoops there, the decisions and trade-offs they've had to make. In the end, I'm only a tourist in their world, but I owe it to them to remember to see them as individuals, valuable human beings, without whom my life would be the poorer.
And we are back and talking with Barbara Morrison. And finally, we've been kind of alluding to what's in this book, this amazing book. It's called Innocent, Confessions of a Welfare Mother. And I have to ask you this, and this is an amazing question, I think. There are so many memoirs on the market now. I mean, dozens of them, hundreds of them. What is different about your book, Innocent?
Well, it's not a woe is me memoir, which a lot of them are, pity parties. There are a lot of preconceptions and stereotypes about welfare moms. And I thought that by telling my story and the stories of people I knew on welfare, I could provide an alternate picture of what it was like for us. I was inspired by Barbara Ehrenreich's book, Nickel and Dimed, where she told the stories of people in blue collar jobs, in minimum wage jobs, to personalize and bring home to all of us readers the suffering or how difficult that life was.
You definitely painted that picture well, by the way. Goodness.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Anyway, how did a college graduate from a middle-class home find herself on welfare?
Well, in the end, it didn't take very much. As my marriage ended and my family was not willing to have me come home, I found myself a single parent of a baby and another one on the way, and it was simply impossible to find a job that would pay even the most minimal living expenses and childcare. It's the childcare. It's having children too young to go to school. It's almost impossible unless you're a lawyer or, you know, some highly paid professional to actually pay for childcare and living expenses.
Yeah.
That salary.
Yeah, I understand. That was a tough time in the 70s because people didn't, you know, you still had the one parent working and one staying at home. And when the father left, the mom usually wound up in trouble, correct?
Correct.
Anyway, why didn't you get a job? You already answered it, but we'll ask you. Well, you can kind of like take it a little further if you like.
Well, yeah, people kept saying, well, you should have just gotten a job. Just get a job. You know, and people would say that to me, you know, get a job. They'd see me with food stamps. They'd get a job. I tried to get a job. I tried repeatedly to get a job, but either they wouldn't hire me, and certainly no one would hire me while I was pregnant, or that I simply couldn't find a job that would pay enough. And it wasn't like I wanted anything really fancy. I was living in a poor part of Worcester in a tenement house and very minimal expenses, but I still couldn't find anything that paid enough.
Yeah, that's a tough thing. Boy, I tell you. So how was it different, that being on welfare? How was it different from what you had expected or the stereotype of welfare?
Well, so many ways. It was not at all what I expected. First off, navigating the application process was so much more complicated than I expected. And it made me wonder how less educated people could possibly manage these extensive forms to fill out and negotiating with the social workers. But the other main thing was I didn't expect to feel so discouraged. I had worked before and assumed that I would work again, but I still felt that hopelessness. In the book, I called it, you know, being stuck sitting on the stoop, you know, just sitting on the stairs out in front of the house, feeling like nothing would ever change and I would never get out of this situation.
But you did.
We all did.
That's right.
It was temporary. Welfare worked for me just the way it was supposed to. It kept us alive for a short period of time until I could start earning again.
Do you think the system works now?
I think it does. I think it's even harder to get by on welfare now. There's a lot that mostly the checks are smaller, the benefits are less, and there's this imposed time limit. Whenever everybody's in a different situation.
Yeah, I guess you're right. And that leads me to my next question. How difficult was it for you with two young boys who probably literally will eat you out of house and home? How difficult was it for you to get by on what they provided you?
It was very difficult. I there's very little cash involved. Once I had paid my minimal rent and heat, which, as you know, in New England is often more expensive than the rent, and electricity, I had very little cash left over. I was reduced to what I called the envelope method, where I would put money, actually cash, into the respective envelopes for what I needed for that week. But there was never an emergency fund. There was never anything left over. And I often ran out of money.
I'm sure that you did, because what people don't understand, perhaps, or maybe they do, and I'm just trying to be naive a little, is that with food stamps, they only buy certain things, right?
Right. Just food. You can't buy soap. You can't buy lotion. You can't buy diapers, although I was using washable cloth diapers. But these days, those are hard to find, and most people use disposable diapers. All those things, anything that isn't actual food, you can't use food stamps for.
Yeah, that must make it tough to get a job if you don't have any soap to wash your body with.
Correct.
Now, there is humor in this book, and this is kind of where I was going with it, because there was a part in your book where I believe you said, I'm in love with my washing machine.
Oh, I was.
Yeah, you say, did you have to work to see the humor in your situation?
Well, I certainly had to learn to laugh at myself. I hate laundromats, and I hated dragging those piles of dirty diapers to the laundromat. So when I actually got a washing machine through emergency assistance, I was just so thrilled. And I guess it shows you the quality of my life that was a high point for the whole year, getting a washing machine. But I wanted to include some of those funny things because I wanted to show that our lives weren't unrelieved misery. I mean, we were just like any parents. We tried within whatever resources we had to make a good life for our children. We tried to have fun with them and show them a good time.
Yeah, you know what? The key for me when I read this book was the kids didn't even know they were broke until someone told them.
No, they didn't. They didn't.
And that's the secret to this whole thing. You know, that's the secret, I think. Now, has the experience of being on welfare, how has that changed you? Has it changed you?
Oh, it definitely has changed me. For one thing, I'm not afraid of being poor. I've been there. So I'm not so worried about losing my job as I hear people around me being really stressed about that. But mostly, the biggest change is that people were so generous with me. Other welfare mothers gave me hand-me-down clothes. They gave me food if I ran out before the end of the month. People at the college where I wanted to get training for a job helped me. So many people helped me, and it made me be more generous. I have tried ever since to pay it forward, as we say now, to help other people and be more generous with other people.
Yeah, that's probably, it's that karma thing, right? What goes around comes around.
It's
now,
true.
I forgot to ask you this or bring this up to you on my show, but you had this interesting, you know, we used to do this thing on my show called Tarot Tuesday, and I would just mock this thing because it would be silly. But then the last time I did it, almost everything happened, and it was weird. I still don't buy it, but you had a card reading, and it was not a tarot card reading, but just, well, I don't know what you would call them, a fortune teller, psychic, whatever they are. But they used a deck of cards and told you things that would happen that you said, no way, and they all happened. That was part of the catch of this book.
Isn't that bizarre? I mean, I'm with you. I don't really believe in this stuff, but it did all come true. And of course, it was one of those funny episodes because here you are stuck. You can't find a job. You're despairing of ever getting off welfare. So what do? You go to a fortune teller. It was a silly thing to do, but, you know, it was fun. It was just, and it was so unexpected that those things came true.
Yeah. You'll have to buy the book to find out, but that's kind of how you and your friend Jill kind of went through this whole thing together through humor, right?
It's true. It's true. You know, Jill is an artist, and one of the things that she taught me through her work as an artist is to just play. You know, it doesn't have to be the greatest thing ever produced, but just do the best you can and have fun with it.
That's right. That's exactly right. That's what I learned growing up poor. That's how I started this radio show. I said, whatever, I didn't get paid to talk before, so what's the difference if I don't now? But I'm going to give it a shot.
Why not?
And it freaks people out in Greece because they don't think that way, like I think. But then they're not from New York. So anyhow, of the friends you include in the story, and you included several, and it's their stories are just as amazing in some cases as yours were or are. But some receive assistance and some don't. Is there any one factor that made the difference for these people?
Well, the factor is having being a single parent of preschool children. The people who had a second income, you know, an income from a spouse, they didn't need to go on assistance. But almost universally, the single parents of preschool children had to receive assistance.
All right. Okay. And now, is there something more that we as a society, and I'm talking about the human society because this is an international show, is there more we can do to help single parents move out of poverty? And when we know something or something's not right, how can we help them?
Well, Europe is way ahead of the U.S. on some of these things, but the obvious things are to have a single-payer health insurance. Because I was pregnant, needing health insurance to help me pay for the birth and the prenatal care was one of the main reasons that I ended up going on welfare. So having health insurance that's provided, universal health insurance, is a big, big thing. Daycare, having reliable, affordable daycare available is another big thing. With that, if there had been a daycare allowance, boom, all those single parents could have worked. And then there are the less obvious things like reliable transportation. I live now in a city where you can't really count on the bus system to get you anywhere on time for a job. And then having the right clothes to wear to work, all those little things that are needed. I've been really excited in Baltimore, where I live now, that there are various charities trying to pick up these pieces. So there is an organization called Suited to Succeed, where they have donations of work clothes for women that they give free to women in poverty so that they can use them to get a job, for example.
Okay, so you've remained active as a, I don't know how to put that, you're an advocate for raising awareness for poverty, correct? Would that be right?
Yes, that's what I'm trying to do, trying to be.
I was trying to spit it out there. I was trying to think of the right way to put it, you know, because you don't...
That's exactly right, advocate, yeah.
You're a very good one. They should read your book, believe me.
Thank you.
And you're a good role model, by the way. Because there's a lot of people who didn't make it who would have if they'd have had something like this that you've written. I got to tell you that. Well, finally, and I know you're fed up with me by now, is there a final thought you'd like to leave our listeners with?
When I was on welfare, the program was called Aid to Families with Dependent Children, AFDC. Now it's called something else, TANF. But the thought I'd like to leave people with is that whatever you think about the parents, the single moms, it's about the dependent children. It's about keeping them alive, keeping them fed, keeping them warm and safe. And so when you think about the minuscule portion of your taxes that go to support social programs, just think about the children. That's what I would ask.
And that was well said. Thank you so much for appearing on the program with us.
Thank you for having me, Phil.
Oh, I enjoyed it, believe me. Folks, this is a great book. It's going to change the way you think about a lot of things, I promise you. There'll be a review and purchasing information for Innocence, Confessions of a Welfare Mother by Ms. Barbara Morrison. And that's going to wrap it up for today's edition, or this week's edition, of the Writers Showcase podcast. Until next week, you all take care of yourselves. And enjoy the reading.